This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, an ancient Egyptian temple hit by a suicide bomber. Jeb Bush gets ready to join the long, long list of Republican U.S. presidential hopefuls. New research finds creativity comes with risk.
To be creative, you have to be able to think differently. You have to be able to think outside the box. And when you leave the box in the morning, you may not be able to make it back to the box at night.
Country music loses its womenfolk. We'll explain. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. A suicide bomber blew himself up Wednesday outside the ancient Karnak Temple in southern Egypt in an attack that left four people wounded. Officials say the attack involved two other people who were killed by police and that none of the wounded were tourists. There's been no claim of responsibility. The temple in the city of Luxor is part of a UNESCO World Heritage Site on the banks of the Nile River that is a major tourist attraction for both foreign and Egyptian tourists. VOA's Jeffrey Young spoke with the Egyptian Tawfiq Hamid, who is an analyst at the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, to find out more about the possible implications of the attack.
Mr. Hamid, once again we see an attack on a very important Egyptian tourist site. And it makes me think about the late 1990s when there was a rash of these incidents back then directed against the government of Hosni Mubarak. Is it fair to say that this incident might be directed against the government of al-Sisi?
Absolutely. It's the same tactic but used against a different person. They are the same people, the radical, the terrorists, the jihadists, the Islamists. And they used every way just to get the power to control Egypt as Islamists controlled other parts of the world.
But tourism is such an important aspect of the Egyptian economy that when you have incidents like this and you scare away tourists, it doesn't just affect the government of Egypt. It affects a whole lot of people in the private sector who make their money by selling things and doing things for tourists. So doesn't this really have a broad-based impact?
That's absolutely correct. And here the government can play an important role by having a media campaign to teach people that the damage that's happening in their economy is to a great extent, caused by such attacks or suicidal bombing or terrorism. It's important to direct the anger of people against the jihadists and the radicals rather than the government. And this needs a very powerful media campaign to inform people that the economical damage that's happening or any economical damage that will happen, they should blame only the radicals and they should turn against them rather than the government. And that is a very important part here that the government can play this role of redirecting the anger toward the real people who deserve it.
I am surprised that someone within the Egyptian government hasn't already thought of this campaign and started it. It makes you wonder, why haven't they done this before?
Really, it's hard to understand exactly how they think, but I'm talking here from a cognitive psychology background, which is part of my research as well in addition to the experience in radicalism. It's important to create a psychological link between things. There is a mechanism in the brain called the spreading activation model that links things together. So if you now use this event to create a negative reinforcement against the radicals, more negative reinforcement to show that the economy can be weakened, yes, but this is because of these people. People will turn more against them. In fact, people are already turning against them. In this incident, for example, people have a taxi driver informed the police about this radical, so the attack was aborted at a very early stage before killing much more people. So there is some momentum, but it must be magnified more and it must be pushed to the highest level because we are dealing with a real threat here.
Tawfiq Hamid is an analyst with the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies in Washington. I'm Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
Islamist militants have carried out repeated gun and bomb attacks in Egypt's Sinai Peninsula in recent years, mainly targeting security forces. It's time for a look at what's trending on social media with Michael Lippin. Michael, I hear the U.S. men's soccer team made a splash today on the web.
They did.
What brought them all the attention?
Thanks, Ray. Well, yes, the U.S. men's national team made that splash by doing something rather unexpected. It's the 27th ranked team in the world right now, and it just beat the number one ranked team and the reigning World Cup champion Germany on German soil for the very first time. Now, the final score was 2-1 to the U.S. in Cologne, with the U.S. scoring the winner in the 87th minute. That resulted in the USMNT, the hashtag USMNT, becoming one of the top trending items on Twitter in the United States and worldwide in the past few hours. I've been looking at analytics website Topsy, and it shows that the hashtag USMNT has been tweeted at least 75,000 times today, exceeding the 48,000 tweets that mentioned it last Friday. Now, that's when the U.S. men's team achieved another impressive milestone by beating the Netherlands for the very first time in a match in Amsterdam.
So, Michael, how have soccer fans been reacting to these latest results?
Well, U.S. supporters, as you might imagine, have been ecstatic. The Soccer America blog had this to say about U.S. team coach Jurgen Klinsmann on its Twitter feed. It said, "Credit to Klinsmann, he's got USMNT players playing with confidence, and it shows. The two wins in Europe were no flukes." And U.S. supporters were not the only ones who were impressed. An editor for U.S. Major League Soccer, Kyle McCarthy, was in Cologne for Klinsmann's post-match news conference. McCarthy later tweeted, "Klinsmann gets clapped off the stage by German media." Klinsmann is actually a German national himself, and the fact that his countrymen were applauding him says a lot about the respect that he's earned in his home country for his work with the U.S. team, Ray.
So, Michael, I also see we have a new Twitter account.
We do. Yeah, it is at VOA underscore IE. We just set that up a couple hours ago, and we're hoping to use it in the coming days and weeks as a way to tell our audience about our programming coming up and the big interviews that we're doing. And we also want to use it as a way to have a communication and a conversation with our audience. So we look forward to getting a lot of feedback and communicating with all of our listeners out there in the coming months.
Michael Lippin, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Coming up, former Governor Jeb Bush polishes his foreign policy credentials before a big announcement next week. VOA East Asia editor Colin Lovett is finishing up his visit to Cambodia. Speaking from Phnom Penh, he tells Sarah Williams about the plight of some migrant workers and visits a notorious former Khmer Rouge prison.
Well, Colin, I understand that you've been doing some reporting about some of the exploitation of Cambodian migrant workers who leave their country to seek better opportunities abroad, but then that doesn't happen.
Yeah, my colleague and I, Porn Bapa, who works for the VOA Khmer Service, we interviewed a man named Kim Singley. Singley is a Cambodian man who left Cambodia in 2009 to try to find work overseas. He thought he was signing up to work on a fishing boat in Thailand. Next thing he knows, he's being held on an island in the remotest part of Indonesia with no wages and no hope of escape. And he spent 6 years fishing on boats in the remote part of Indonesia before the camp where he and hundreds of other men were being held was discovered and dismantled. And he just returned to Cambodia. And his return and the return of some of the other men is really kind of a chance for both NGOs and Cambodian authorities to use it as a warning to other Cambodians that this happens to a lot of men and women who go overseas looking for work illegally. They get caught up in these human networking scams that lure them in and then exploit them.
And what can be done to try to stop this situation?
Education is certainly one. The people that we talked to talked about, you know, having an education campaign amongst Cambodians, especially rural Cambodians, which are the people most likely in this country to suffer from extreme poverty and be most likely to go overseas in search of a better job. Also changing the mechanism by which many of these people go overseas, especially in particular Thailand, which is bordering here, and Malaysia, which is a very short ride away. They want to improve the mechanisms, the legal mechanisms, for these people to go. There is a lot of work in those countries for impoverished people from Cambodia and Myanmar, which are the largest groups to go. But unfortunately, the way the system is set up now in Thailand and Malaysia, as well as the exit visas out of Cambodia and Myanmar, is it's really hard for a lot of these men and women to find legal avenues to fill jobs that, you know, quite frankly, people in Thailand and Malaysia want to fill. These are lower paying jobs in richer countries. And so education, improving the mechanisms for legal travel, and then cracking down on, you know, taking the criminal justice route and trying to crack down on the people who traffic in these people and exploit them.
And now, Colin, when I spoke to you yesterday, you said you were intending to go to visit the infamous Tolsling prison, former prison. Were you able to do that?
We went by it for about almost 10 minutes. It was a very busy day, and Tolsling ended up becoming very low on the agenda. It's still very stark. It's the way it used to be. There is a stupa, which is a Buddhist kind of memorial that has been built on the ground, Tolsling. That's new. There's some more signage. It's a little bit better marked as far as a place for tourists and others to come and look at, kind of in the way that Auschwitz and some of the death camps in Germany have become tourist spots for people who want to see what the horrors are all about. But at its core, it's still this very stark building. It used to be a school before they turned it into a torture center. And it's a very stark place, and it's a stark reminder the horrific, unspeakable evil that this country suffered just a generation ago.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Colin.
Thank you, Sarah.
VOA's Colin Lovett reporting from Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Listening to VOA's International Edition, I'm Ray Kugel. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush is in Europe, and no, it's not a vacation. He's hoping to bolster his foreign policy credentials in advance of his official presidential announcement next week. VOA's Jim Malone has more on the challenges ahead as another Bush tries to make it to the White House.
Jeb Bush's foreign policy trip includes visits to three U.S. allies, Germany, Poland, and Estonia, and comes just days before he takes the plunge and joins the 2016 race for president. During a speech in Germany, Bush urged the West to take a stronger stand against Russian aggression aimed at Ukraine under the leadership of Russian President Vladimir Putin, whom he called a ruthless pragmatist.
Russia must respect the sovereignty of all of its neighbors. And who can doubt that Russia will do what it pleases if aggression goes unanswered? Our alliance, our solidarity, and our actions are essential if we want to preserve the fundamental principles of our international order.
In the run-up to his presidential campaign, Jeb Bush has been quick to pay tribute to his father and brother, both former presidents, but insists he will be his own man should he win the White House next year.
I love my brother. I love my dad.
actually love my mother as well. Hope that's okay. And I admire their service to the nation and the difficult decisions that they had to make. But I'm my own man, and my views are shaped by my own thinking and my own experiences.
But Bush did stumble recently when asked if he would have handled the war in Iraq differently from his brother, former President George W. Bush. Jeb Bush eventually said that knowing what he knows now, he would not have ordered the invasion of Iraq. Establishing his own political identity will be critical moving forward, says University of Virginia expert Larry Sabato.
He wants to have it both ways, as politicians always do. He wants to get the nomination because of the Bush name. And at the same time, he wants to declare he's his own man. Well, you can't have it both ways. And inevitably, he'll be held accountable to some degree for George W. Bush's very controversial presidency.
Bush has been able to use his family name to raise tens of millions of dollars from Republican donors for his upcoming campaign. But Bush faces skepticism from some conservatives and the challenge of winning over younger voters who may be looking for a fresh face. Public opinion polls show Bush near the top of the 10-person Republican field at the moment, along with Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and Florida Senator Marco Rubio. Bush's announcement will make him the 11th official Republican candidate. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
One of the questions philosophers have grappled with for centuries is, do you have to be a little crazy to be creative? Genetic researchers now think they have an answer. What makes people creative also makes them crazy. Maya Pujara explains.
Artist Vincent van Gogh painted iconic images like Starry Night. Mathematician John Nash developed revolutionary ideas in economics. Considered geniuses in their art, both men also suffered from fits of hallucinations and bouts of deep emotional despair. Geneticist Carrie Stephenson wondered about the differences between the brilliant brains that spawned jaw-dropping paintings and mathematical proofs and the average brains of the rest of us.
To be creative, you have to be able to think differently. You have to be able to think outside the box. And when you leave the box in the morning, you may not be able to make it back to the box at night.
So he and colleagues from the Decode Genetics Group in Iceland gathered information on tens of thousands of actors, musicians, visual artists, and writers in the country and looked at their genes for clues. The researchers found genetic variations that are also found in people who have schizophrenia, even if the artists did not have the disorder. Stephenson compares it to a double-edged sword.
Creativity, just like almost everything in our world, everything in our lives, comes with a price. And that price is paid by this 1% who develop schizophrenia. And this double nature of the qualities conferred on us by our brain, and for some people this turns out to be good, for other people it turns out to be bad.
Stephenson says understanding the association between creativity and mental illness could help health professionals treating schizophrenia to contain the beast while keeping the beauty. Maya Pajara for VOA News, Washington.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
My name is Raymond Wang. I'm from Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Yes, that's Raymond Wang. He's not new. He's 17 years old. What is new is what he's invented, a way to keep germs from spreading in airplane cabins.
I was able to generate modifications to the aircraft cabin in order to reduce disease transmission by up to 55 times and improve passenger pressure inhalation by up to 190%.
Wang invented fin-shaped devices that redirect the cabin's airflow, creating virtual walls of air around each passenger. Wang says it would only cost about $1,000 to install the devices in an airplane cabin.
It's basically be able to improve airflow overnight.
And as the winner of the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair, Wang is now $75,000 richer. 17 years old.
It feels amazing. I never expected that this would happen.
For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grossons.
The European Union's Justice Agency says it arrested about 50 suspects in an international identity theft sting that involved millions of euros stolen from bank accounts. The agency, known as Eurojust, announced Wednesday most of those picked up are from Nigeria and Cameroon. The investigation involves $6.8 million stolen from European bank accounts and transferred out of Europe. Eurojust says the scam involved stealing victims' usernames and passwords and using the information to steal money from private bank accounts. The world-governing football body FIFA says it suspended the bidding process for the 2026 World Cup because of the ongoing corruption scandal. The host of the 2026 World Football Championship was set to be chosen by FIFA members during a 2017 meeting in Malaysia. It is not clear when the decision now will be made. The United States, Canada, Mexico, and European countries are thought to be among the likely bidders for the tournament.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOANews.com.
Visit VOANews.com and click on podcasts to learn how you can subscribe.
There used to be a lot of prominent female stars in country music. Now, not so much. What's happened? David Byrd and Nikki Strong put their heads together to search for some answers to this burning question.
If you've listened to country radio any time in the past few years, you've probably heard the names of Dierks Bentley, Brad Paisley, Darius Rucker, Lee Bryce, Luke Bryan, Kenny Chesney, Jason Aldean, of course. But what you might not have heard is too many women's names. That's a problem, at least according to some of the ladies of country. But consultant Keith Hill doesn't think so. To talk about this, I'm joined by Nikki Strong. Nikki, welcome.
How are you doing?
I am well. I am well. I did that little rundown there of the artists because that's the guys that played when I was coming to work.
Yes.
It's in about a 45-minute time period. Mm-hmm. It was the only female voices I heard were from Lady Antebellum and from Little Big Town. But as far as solo female artists, there aren't that many being played on country radio.
No.
And this guy, Keith Hill, who's supposedly a big guru in country programming, has set off a bit of a storm. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, he was interviewed and he talked about that if you want to win in the ratings game in country radio, take the women out. He pretty much said, you know, the meat of country music is pretty much bro music. It's all the guys.
Right.
Women are like tomatoes.
So we're talking guys like Luke Bryan, Blake Shelton,
exactly.
Kenny Chesney.
Yes.
Jason Aldean, of course.
Oh, yes, Jason, who are all on the charts right now.
Right.
But it caused a real big firestorm among a lot of artists, particularly women artists. Miranda Lambert was one of the most outspoken.
Mm.
She made an excellent point. She said it's very dangerous to say that. She said because, first of all, it reduces women in their contribution, number one. She said also it makes women less valuable. So it makes labels less willing to sign women country artists,
right.
Makes them less willing to put resources behind them, good writers, good producers, and they feel like they're not going to make well on their investment. And when you have consultants like Mr. Hill, who are consulting radio stations and who are making these major decisions, he's impacting the bottom line for a lot of women, a lot of households. And this mentality of don't play too many women on music, it's not just across country, it's across other genres as well.
Hmm.
And I know part of it dates back to when women, really, they were only like 10% of the artists that were played on radio.
Right.
So consultants would say, spread them out. But during the course of the years and under the game of telephone, it became don't put two women back to back because it'll alienate your female listeners. So he also talked about when he does research that a lot of women, when they do research, will turn away when there's too many women artists. But there are other consultants that disagree with him as well.
And see, nobody says don't put two guys back to back.
Exactly.
So that formula doesn't hold.
And they don't say, oh, well, if women don't, you know, listen to the guys, don't play them back to back.
Right.
They just get rid of that song.
Right. Exactly. See, I would think it would be a function of is it a good song, regardless of who sings it.
Right. And that's, and some people were saying that, you know, as you have more female country artists trying to do like the pop thing, that's not going to work either.
Mm.
But again, it gets dangerous if you feel like, okay, I have a woman artist, I have to do what's been proven.
Uh-huh.
I have to try and Taylor Swift her,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to really developing her voice.
We'd love to hear your opinion about this. You can post it on our Facebook page. That's VOA Music. You can also post a comment on Nikki's show, Country Hits USA. That's at voanews.com.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news and information on our website anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stopping the recruitment of foreign terrorist fighters is a key concern for the global coalition to counter ISIL. General John Allen, the U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for the Global Coalition to Counter ISIL, stressed this point in his speech to the Brookings Doha U.S. Islamic World Forum. He noted that comprehensive approaches to reduce the foreign terrorist fighter flow must start at the point of radicalization. Last year's United Nations Security Council Resolution 2178 calls on all nations to strengthen their borders, share information, and adjust their laws to criminalize traveling for terrorism. More than 30 partners have now made legal and justice reforms intended to make it more difficult to travel to the battlefront. Increasingly, as a result of the Internet, it is no longer necessary for foreign terrorist fighters to leave their home countries to be radicalized and recruited. This phenomenon has opened the door to radicalized individuals to conduct terrorist attacks in their home countries. Lone offender attackers, as they have become known, are a growing concern. That is why all nations need to work together at every link along the chain, at every border between a potential foreign terrorist fighter and the battle space, in their home communities, and at the point of recruitment and radicalization. The coalition's Foreign Terrorist Fighter Working Group is organizing coalition action around 9 fronts, ranging from border control to information sharing to mapping travel to improving legal capabilities and post-counteroffensive foreign terrorist fighter flows. ISIL is practiced in exploiting a sense of ruthlessness and separation that many young people feel in their communities, whether in minority communities in the West, in certain Arab societies, or in Southeast Asia. A feeling of disenfranchisement and otherness is present and powerful for many, said General Allen. There is also separation between the opportunities young people see on their smartphones and those they believe are available to them in their own lives. We must guard against the manipulation of these separations and anxieties, said General Allen, while at the same time working to address their root causes. Stopping the flow of foreign terrorist fighters is critical to winning the fight against ISIL. Through strength and unity of purpose, ISIL can and will be defeated.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
is for, what's